Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of November 6th, and the Japan series is done, and the season is over, and Jim is still in Fukuoka, but he's going to come back later tonight. How you doing, buddy? Good to be with you.
It's bright and early, and I'm good. I'm good. We had a late night game last night, and I'm still breathing and have overcome an obstacle course.
Well, you're here, you're up early, so I don't know what time you went to sleep.
Well, when I get to Fukuoka Dome, I walk in the door, and as you know, I had a broken bone in February in my left hip, and the doctor had been warning me, you know, be careful and don't fall, don't stumble. And I've been really careful. And as I'm walking through the door and I'm picking my, you know, I step with my left foot into the entranceway and I'm picking up my right and stepping. And the guy working at the security at Fukuoka Dome decided at that instant it was time to pick up the carpet and adjust it.
No.
And my right foot snagged on the bottom of the carpet that he just put in front of my foot. And I went sprawling across the entranceway on my broken hip.
Oh, no.
And I'm going like, I'm just livid. I'm going, what the heck are you doing, man? And he's like going, oh, are you okay? You look okay to me. And I'm going, I'm not going to know I'm okay until the doctor says I'm okay. Right. I was pretty paranoid there. And the muscles were all tight for a while. But the other thing is the muscles are good. So and I know the muscles are good, are pretty good because my hip doesn't set off metal scanners anymore.
Oh, good, good.
So that happened, and then I did get to the game in one piece, more or less, and I did survive the game, and I did get, you know, everything. It was a trying travel day. It was like a amazing race or something.
Okay, well, we're here, and the Hawks are again the champions of Japan, winning in six games against the Yokohama Bay Stars in the Japan Series. So we're going to talk about the Japan's Fall Classic. Jim also talked to Alex Ramirez, or got into the media scrum after the game. So we'll play that for you, and we'll talk about that. And then we've got some notes. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, well, we all waited patiently after the, I guess, about a half hour's worth of on-field celebrations and standing around and confetti dropping and noise playing and fireworks blowing and such. And
jubilation.
There was a lot of that. There was a lot of that going on, and waited for the Hawks to come out and waiting for the Bay Stars to come out because, well, I wanted to hear what Alex Ramirez had to say. So I was among the about 20 media members who cornered him. Well, he chose to talk in a corner, so that's where we did it. I think it was less confrontational than that. And he explained his views about, you know, what the series meant to him and to his team, and I thought it was pretty vintage Alex Ramirez. And so let's have a listen to what he told the Japanese media.
You know, I told the players that, you know, what a wonderful year it was for us. You know, this is not a loss. We gain so much, you know, from being here. You know, I keep telling the players right from the beginning of the season, we walk through the main door, we get out through the main door, and that's exactly what we did today. And I feel proud of my players, and I want the players to feel proud of themselves. Mm. That's what I told them.
Well, we were almost there, last play, that was kind of unfortunate, but what do you think?
Well, that happens. That's part of the game, you know. I mean, we cannot, you know, say, you know, if this guy would have done this, if this would have happened. Now, you know, we fought until the end. We did our best. The best that we could, and we just came out short. That's all. But, you know, I feel, like I said, I feel proud of my guys.
So looking back at the Nihon City, so how do you feel now?
Well, I feel like I gained a lot by being here in the Nihon Series. You know, last year we we experienced in second stage in the climax, and we were able to pass this year that climax, and that's the same way that I feel for next year. Now we got to prepare ourselves to be able to win the Central League and also try to win the Nippon Series next year. Mm.
You always mentioned that we can learn from the games we lost. Then, so you think that we learned a lot of things from this Neon Cities?
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the things is a lot. First of all, you cannot give anything for granted. Take anything for granted. Any little thing, you always have to be prepared for everything, any situation. We prepare ourselves pretty good. Of course, there were, a couple of mistakes here and there, but, that happened. That's part of the game. That's how we learn from those things. We're human. We make mistakes, and that's, that happens.
Well, we experienced a lot in the book in a better way, in a positive way. But as yourself, as a kantoku, then you experienced, in a very good way. What do you think?
I feel very proud of myself by making a lot of decisions and of course the players made those decisions good I think that I have learned so much especially one of the things about especially these games, most important things is not to regret after the game, and that's exactly what happened today. We didn't lose, we just came out short. We gained so much from this, but I don't regret anything because we played the cards right. We did everything that we needed to do, to win the game.
Did our best. Like I said, I'm not gonna say this was missed or this or that. We did our best. We had them. They're a good team. I mean, we gotta give them credit. I mean, there's 94 games during the regular season, and especially at home. I mean, 50 games and 20 games or 18 games at home. I mean, they had everything. So we did everything we could.
Well, he has been swinging pretty good in batting practice, and especially yesterday when I came and saw his batting practice, I just felt that, he was going to be, good in the game. So I didn't want to say anything until today. I made the final decision today after his batting practice. And, that's the reason why. I mean, when you have, Otosaga didn't get any hit, and I felt that, Hosokawa wasn't going to get any strike to hit, a lot of breaking balls. So I felt that he was the best at that point to put into play. One of my outside box, and it worked he put us in the game. But We just couldn't win, but that he did a tremendous job.
Yes, that was a sign. I felt that there was, he had two strikeouts at that point.
Moving the guys over, would have been a good situation. And he did a tremendous bunt. I mean, the guy made a great play on him, but that was a tremendous bunt.
What made you decide to use him one more inning?
Well, he was good enough. I mean, the key in this series was the left-handed pitchers, as all you guys know. Too bad that he was, he walked those two guys, but that was the key. At that point, after that, I had to change him. I had to make a decision and change him. But the key in this series was the left-handed pitchers. Actually, Hamaguchi was going to go on the 12th inning. He was getting ready to go on the 12th inning. Close the game. Three innings. I was expecting from him.
Hi. The pitcher that he's through to the first base setup,
Well, he had to make a decision on that play, and he felt that, throwing to first base was the best decision that he needed to make at that point, and that's what he did. That's what happens, on the field sometimes. You got to make your own decisions.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Great series.
It was a wonderful series. Yeah.
Never have enough lefties, I guess.
I know, right? Right, come on. Right, come on. Good job.
Did you learn anything as a manager? Did you learn as a player in this?
As a player, you worry about yourself. As a manager, there's so many things to worry about and learn. Stay calm, and try to use the best players you can. The right timing.
You did a good job staying at home. Huh?
Thank you very much.
Anyway, I'll let you go and take care.
Well, thank you again, Alex. It was good fun. I did walk after that conversation. We walked out to the entrance hall where nobody was trying to trip us up, and
no security guards and magic carpets out there, huh?
Yeah, nobody was trying to give us an extra obstacle. And now I asked him, you know, did you learn? You know, you'd played in three Japan series, one with the Swallows and two with the Yomiuri Giants. And did you learn anything about the Japan series as a manager that you didn't learn as a player? And he said, well, a manager's got to take, you know, the same thing he's told us every time we ask him that question. You know, the manager's got to look out for everybody, and he's got to be thinking about what everybody's doing instead of just yourself. So he didn't really answer the question. So we'll see.
I disagree. I think that is a real answer. I think what he's saying is it's hard. It's difficult to manage every single personality with everyone watching and the pressure of a Japan series on the line.
Well, right. Yeah. But he learned how to do that already. I mean, it's the same answer. It's the same answer as he always gives, is what I'm saying. It was nothing new.
Maybe he's saying that the intensity level is much higher.
I don't think so. He just said, oh, you have to think about everybody. I've heard this answer about 10 times in the last 2 years. It was not a new answer. It was not anything insightful. So, I mean, I hope that if he has a chance to look back on it and think of a couple of things that happened, maybe we'll talk about that later. But for now, I'm not buying that he had to relearn
how to manage these guys because their intensity was higher, and so
it was pretty run of the mill. Yeah, it was pretty, no, this is my answer. Get out of here. You're bothering me, kid. He can call me. Exactly. Okay. So Mr. Gibson, what do you want to comment on?
Yeah. Excuse me. Listening to him talk and give these answers with the media, it just seemed to me that this was a classic happy to be here kind of statements that he was giving. You know, the experience was invaluable and the players learned from it and all these pressures and these forces pushing you from different ways in the Japan series, how it's completely different from the regular season. But I thought the way he managed was championship worthy for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't seem like they were just happy to be there. They were playing to win those games. You hear him talk about at the end that he was going to send Hamaguchi out there and wanted him to throw the last three innings.
Mm.
And I don't know about that plan, seeing as he was coming off a short rest, but that's what he, you know, they didn't have, you know, the talent level was so divided here. It's so clearly divided. And
what, like American
that,
Civil War
Hawks
divided
had
north and south?
More talent than they did.
There was such a big gap in here, and so I
just don't think he had the resources to match up and it was just equally as bad, I guess, on the pitching side for the Hawks, but they just had more resources to go to, and they, pitching Sarfate for three innings, or parts of three innings, that was three innings. Yeah, that wasn't the greatest strategy, but apparently, Sarfate told Kimiyasu Kudo, the manager of the Hawks, that he would go that third inning. And so that was part of it. But he obviously, I think he threw something somewhere in the neighborhood of 36 pitches.
Yep.
That wasn't a great plan either. But so I just felt like, you know, Alex was saying, hey, we didn't lose the game. We just came up short. And I'm like, well, no, you lost it. You lost it, but that's a good way to spin it. And you see the way the players, or you hear him say the players really performed for him. But I really think it was him getting them into the right mindset, the perfect mindset. Once they went down 3-0, I don't think there was a lot of pressure on them at all, and it seemed like they played much better anyway. The expectations, I think, obviously we took a poll, or I took a poll, and we read some of them. I read some of them. We read some of them once when we recorded the show first last time, and then I read them again when I did a solo act later on in the week. But most of our listeners said, hey, we're expecting the Hawks to win in five, maybe six. And they, but the way they play after that first snoozer of a game, they played, they, I think they outperformed a lot of expectations in that respect. So, yeah, he had the players really performing those last three games, and the pressure was off, and they just seemed to play that way. So I expect actually to see some really good things from the Bay Stars next season, especially if they get out there and get some more help in terms of deepening that lineup and you know, fewer slap hitters and more line drive hitters, maybe in the form of some free agent or foreign pickup or something like that. But I like the whole demeanor that Alex brought to the bench and to the post-game press conferences, even this one where he's saying, hey, you know, we don't feel like we lost to them. We just ran out of time. We just came up short. You know, if we could have played a little bit longer, if something was different, we would have won.
What I want to say is, yeah, I think I kind of agree. As you know, yeah, we lost. We fell short. I think those are both accurate. They lost and they fell short. And but obviously, when we fell short, I think he's agreeing with your assessment, and I think he did agree with the assessment of the talent gap between the two teams. Nobody's going to be thinking the team that barely scraped into third place in the weaker league is going to be as good, is going to have as many resources as the team that blew away the better league. But having said that, there's a couple of things going on here, and one of them is just my comment that, you know, a short series is not like the regular season, because, you know, you don't have to play game 8, 9, 10, you know, you don't have to play game 112.
No, you don't.
So it doesn't really matter if you have a lot of depth. All you need is a bare minimum of depth. And a weaker team can beat a stronger team in that respect. If they play their cards right and the players do well. But here's the thing is, before the series started, I suggested that the Bay Stars were playing with a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. The series was probably, it was closer than I expected. Although I did pick the Hawks to win in six. For that reason, it was closer, and that basically it was each team had one blowout, which we'll address momentarily, which is very rare. It's very rare for the losing team to win a blowout.
Right.
And the losing team of the series to win one game by a blowout. But the other games were all basically one-run games. And the other thing is that managers, you know, you said he got the players up, and my point on that is not so much a disagreement, but basically he let the players do what they do all season, which is prepare, and do his job and let them know he's doing his job and you do your job and try not to mess it up. He did a really good job of trying not to mess up. And Jason Koskrie of the Japan Times was and Kaz Nagatsuka of the Japan Times, and the three of us were in that a huddle of reporters waiting for the Bay Stars people to talk as they mm-hmm. came out of their clubhouse, out of the locker room.
Right.
And pretty much Jason commented that all the Bay Stars players look really upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Except Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, and I could see the one guy who felt like, who looked like, if I could have changed this series if I had if I had played just a little bit better, and that's what he looked like when he left. He was the one who was down because I'm just telling you what I saw. He was the one who was. Don't talk to me. I'm out of here. He was angry.
He looked tight a lot of times in his at-bats, and he didn't, during this whole playoff situation, he didn't look like himself. But even then, you know, he ran into a couple hits and a home run and helped them win a game. And
sure.
He wasn't hitless, and he didn't kill them,
No, he did not kill them.
I was looking out there last night thinking in the ninth inning, I wonder if this is a time you might take to go out for defensive purposes. And he's not a bad outfielder at all, but I'm
he's going to become very competent.
Yeah, but I was thinking that for an instant, and I thought, well, you never know. They're just a home run away from being tied now, and you might have to go into extra.
I wouldn't have taken him out either.
But I thought about it for an instance, but
I wouldn't have done what the Hawks were doing, which was taking all their players out to put in pinch runners. I'm thinking, you know, if you don't score, You're not gonna have any offense left.
You know, I thought about that too, but the thing is with those guys is, first of all, they have them, and we think they're chopped liver at the plate because we look at the numbers, but they battle at the plate too. So I didn't think it was that bad. They certainly not a Despaigne type power guy out there, but the other guys are competent batters who can put together a good at bat, maybe reach base, and that's what they do. That's how they won it. You know, it wasn't the greatest batter or the most talented batter at the plate who got that big hit for them in the last inning. So, anyway, yeah. What else did?
I guess the bit where he talked about it as a learning experience, I think was really good, and I thought he was being. You know, he's typically very positive, and he's looking for every kernel of what is the bright spot. And prior to the game, he said, I have to study hard for the Hawks because they don't have any obvious holes. You know, he was searching for opportunities to exploit matchups, and he said, you know, I have to spend a lot more time on these guys than somebody like, say, the Omiri Giants, who are going to play 25 times a season, because I don't get to see them a lot. And so it is a lot harder, and they don't have many holes to begin with. So
yeah, that's what I was going to point out, is probably because they don't see them as much. And there's some things that you can't see on video or by video that you can see when you play a team. So that requires that you spend more time watching every little detail when you do play them.
But it was a wonderful game, and I thought the comments from the Hawks afterwards were similar, in the sense that they were really impressed with the BayStars like the rest of us, and they were going like, man, these guys finished third. Like, they had a lot of fight for a team that finished third.
Well, and I think, I mean, that was part of my point about Rami Khan's statements in the postseason, that it's just more intense, you know. The whole thing was more intense. But I sincerely believe that once they went down 3-0, they relaxed, because the expectations weren't high for them anyway, I don't think. And I didn't watch a lot of the experts and what they said, but I don't remember. I did see one news program, and everyone said that the two experts they had on there picked the Hawks in like 4 or 5 games. So I don't think the expectation. I think they got a sense of that. And once they went down by 3, once they lost the first 3, well, we just want to win a game at home. Let's just be loose and go out there and have fun and play the game. And that was their best game.
Well, I think games 2 and 3 were really good games. See, that's the thing is, you know, the blow. If you had to take that series and you had to take the first game, the huge blowout, you have to think, wow, this is a mismatch. But that was really, you know, that was the miss. You know, what can I say? That was the red herring in this series. That was the one game that wasn't like the others. And
no,
it was right, and so that was, I think, the misleading part, because after that, basically, the BayStars said, obviously, you know, how do you draw from that game the conclusion that you can actually beat these guys? I don't know, but I think it was a matter of the players, you know, doing, you know, basically getting over their nerves and then doing what they needed to do. There was, and, you know, and playing the game. And I think that's what happens. And, you know, asked about the final play, he said, look, you know, okay, yeah, we could have gotten the out at the plate, but there's 100 things that could have been different. You know, we just have to go out and play the game. And, you know, and the end result is, this is baseball, and things go one way or they go the other. And you can't be worried too much about the, the little details in retrospect.
Right, right. Well, let's take a look back at the game. So game three, the 3-2 victory for the SoftBank Hawks was really, to me, that was kind of an intense game for the Bay Stars. And I thought they were going to be able to pull off that comeback, and they just weren't able to do it. It just seemed like they had chance after chance. And I asked you last night, because they had a runner thrown out, I believe, in that game. It just seemed like all the attempts to steal a base for the Bay Stars went awry. And they were 2-for-6 in the series.
Yep.
And it just seemed like every time they tried to run, that it wasn't happening. And I was messaging with Michael Westbay, the noted Bay Stars fan, off and on throughout the series. But I did mention to him that I saw a special on... and he was not the, it was Takuya Kai.
Mm-hmm.
He was not the catcher in this game, but...
no, it was Kai, Takuya.
Takuya, yeah. Kai, just he can basically kill a mosquito at second base with his accuracy. That's how good he can, that's how well he can.
He has been, And, you know, and I think if, that's an issue which I would, I guess, point out that you can never have enough time to prepare, because I think if Ramirez had had more time, he would have noticed. The Hawks were not really good, successful at throwing out runners, but anyway, they had a poor, let's put it this way, they had a poor year at throwing out runners.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was a team thing that, you know, it's not that we're not going to try to throw out runners, but we're going to worry less about, we're going to focus more on the hitters or something. Because they were not real successful. They were 11th worst. Their caught stealing percentage, opponents caught stealing percentage was 2.26, and that was 11th worst in NPB. And I think, but if you look beyond, and I think Alex Ramirez might have been misled, or his coaches might have been misled to think that they can't throw out runners.
Okay.
Because if you look in past seasons, that hasn't been the case. These catchers, especially as you mentioned, Takaya has been really good. I remember the 2015 series when he was just dynamite, and I thought, no, they can do this. They just it's almost like they hadn't done it. It's almost like they were luring people into a false sense of security. If these games matter, watch out. And the other thing is that Masayuki Kuwahara is the worst player in NPB at stealing bases who actually tries. I say this with players who tried to steal 10 times or more. He has the worst base. He was the worst percentage base stealer in NPB. He went 10 for 21 during the regular season. So
he hit for a higher batting average than stolen base rate.
No. Well, he would wish. You have to. There's a lot of kidding there, but. And granted, he did steal a base, but he ran them out of, you know, he ran them out of a couple of innings, and the whole Bay Stars problem. The Bay Stars were actually really good at getting on base. I mean, they were as good as the Hawks were at getting on base, and that wasn't supposed to happen because their offense is not quite as good, and their bullpen isn't quite as good, so they shouldn't have been able to be as good offensively. But once they got on the bases, they fell apart, and that was really the series.
They didn't have much success, and at this point they lose this game 3-2, and I'm starting to think about the aspects of playoff baseball and just talent situations, and it looks like the Hawks have an elite talent group, and the people's champion or the people's team, the Bay Stars, are just scrappy and they're fighting, and they just don't have enough, and they're just that underdog. And but I was just hoping, okay, well, come back in game 4, hopefully you can get a win for the fans at that stadium and get one for Alex Ramirez. This is his first Japan series. I want to see him win a game. I want to see him have some excitement and some, you know, be on the podium for that winner's managerial interview after the game. It's a great experience. And so he sends out Haruhiro Hamaguchi for game four, and the rookie lefty basically throws a shutout. He doesn't finish it off, but he's no-hitting the Mighty Hawks, you know, into the eighth inning, and he looks great. He's using that mixture of, you know, forkballs, changeups, curves, and fastballs. Sorry to Sachio Kinugasa about, you know, how he mixes up his pitches, but you know, he used all those things and whatever means necessary, and it was just awesome to watch.
It was.
And then Shinya Tsuruoka, of all people, is the one who breaks up the no-no. Not the greatest hitter of all time, but he's the one who gets it. But, you know, it was a great game for them that night. Shuto Takajo had a home run to help pad a lead, and they end up scoring six runs, and the bullpen looks really good. Spencer Patton came on to get the final out of the eighth, and then Toshiro Miyazaki, the batting champion, he also chipped in with three hits, and Takajo, I think, had three hits as well, and they just looked really good, and I'm like, well, this is what we were waiting to see. This is what the fans were waiting to see, this kind of effort and this kind of outcome from the Bay Stars, and I really enjoyed watching that game.
That game was interesting, and I mentioned this about teams winning blowouts, and I looked for teams winning by six runs or more. Losing teams in a Japan series winning games by six runs or more.
So the team that loses the Japan series, but
that's correct,
won a game by a large margin. Okay,
right. It's happened basically five times in 68 years.
Wow.
And as soon as I saw that game, well, there's one qualifier, is that because the Hawks were leading 3-0 in the series, I suppose that Hawks manager Kimi Yasukudo decided to hold tryouts for his pitching staff, and he brought out, you know, when the game was getting away from him, he brought out Ryoti Igarashi, who was not originally on the series roster, but they can change the series roster on a daily basis. In Japan.
Yeah, unlike the United States, right.
That's right. They have 40 players to choose from, and they can move them back and forth. And so he came in to pitch, and the former Rocket boy gave up a rocket-propelled shot from Takajo. And then they brought in Tadashi Setsu, who basically wasn't good enough to be on the roster. I think that, you know, show me what you can do, kid. And it was pretty abysmal. So that helped propel the Bay Stars to a lopsided win. But as soon as they won 6-0, here I'm thinking, you know, if you're winning a game 6-0, you know, people like to say, the good teams win the close games.
Right.
Well, if you're in a close game, I guess if you have 100 games and 100 close games, yeah, the good team will win more of the close games than the bad team. But let me ask you another question. If you had 100 blowouts, which team, you had a good team and a bad team, and they played 100, and between them there were 100 blowouts, how many times do you think the bad team would blow out the good team? The answer is pretty much never.
Yeah, not very
right.
Many.
So the good teams win all the games, but the games they really win are the blowouts. So you rarely see, the games that good teams generally win are the blowouts, and the good team, the places where it is least likely that quality will show through in terms of victory are in close games, because that's when the weak team has the best chance to win.
So
the point is,
so
the
basically,
point,
yeah, stronger teams have a tendency to have more blowouts.
Yes.
And teams don't usually blow out.
They don't blow out better teams. Yes. Teams. Generally. Correct. So I'm just saying that analogy, the best teams win the closest pennant races. Which is, no, the best teams win the pennant races that aren't races, because they destroy everybody.
Right.
So anyway, moving along to that point, so the 6-0 win by the Bay Stars was significant in that respect, and I thought this is going to be a series now. I was maybe the only one who thought when the Bay Stars won 6-0 that this game, that they weren't going to lose. You know, this series was going back to Fukuoka, but that's, they certainly, they had that that game gave the series its signature quality, I think, at least from a statistical point of view.
Okay. The Bay Stars come back in game five the next night, and they win 5-4. And I guess what stood out for me in this game was, the bullpen. Not necessarily, I mean, the Hawks got that customary first inning run, which seemed like it happened almost every game.
Right.
And except game six. But the Bay Stars fell behind early. They came back, took a 2-1 lead, then they fell behind again, and then they had a 3-run sixth inning. And you talked about Kudo having tryouts. I thought he was, again, being very loose. He just seemed not to be panicking and not making. He didn't seem like he was managing playoff games.
Exactly.
It seemed like he was. So, yeah, I just thought maybe he was trying to send a message to his players. Hey, there's no reason to panic. We've got a 3-1 lead. We can still win this game and wrap this thing up. So we're just going to play it like we normally do. I didn't get it. You know,
and no.
The things after this particular game that I saw Kudo laughing and smiling kind of, you know, with his players a little bit in terms of, you know, you missed that play or you messed that up, you know, and it was a laugh and a smile instead of a stern look like, hey, let's get this done. And I'm not saying that he needs to be angry. And I'm not really, I mean, I know his personality. I think you know him a little bit better. You've talked to him a lot. But I thought he was darn near laughing in the dugout after they lost this game. And that said to me that, you know what, either he thinks his team is not worried, the players are not worried, and he wants to keep that atmosphere of a loose kind of atmosphere, or he's saying, well, you know, it's okay to lose this game. You know, we're good. We're still going to win back home. I didn't know what the message was. I don't know him that well. But I certainly thought that left an impression with me. I didn't know what to make of it. I wasn't sure what he was saying, of course, but I didn't know what to make of that.
Well, I think he's good at not putting pressure on people. I think that's the same message from Alex Ramirez, is that, you know, his way of doing the same thing, which is, I'm not angry with you for losing this game. You know, hey, these guys are ball players, and this stuff's going to happen. And I think that was the message. You know, we're still loose. We're still a really good team. I think the message you don't want to get is, we're still, you know, we've still won 3 games and we only need to win one more. But that was definitely, he said, he said after they lost that first game, there was a little bit of a sense that, okay, we've got to win this next game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he said that after game 4, we started thinking we have to win this game. And I think he was concerned that the players were putting too much pressure on themselves to win one game instead of just playing their games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I the other thing that the impression that these managers were willing to go longer than we saw in the World Series with the starters, that they just kind of stuck with them. It looked like at sometimes Rick Vandenhoek was a starter for the Hawks, and he didn't give up that many hits, and he had 8 strikeouts, but he just didn't seem to be sharp in that 6th inning, and I think I would have gotten him out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
The same with Kenta Ishida. He pitched into the 5th inning, but obviously, and he made 98 pitches, but I think Alex kind of stuck with him a little bit longer than I was expecting him to.
Yeah, well,
that was the impression I had of this game.
Yeah, I was talking with Jose Lopez yesterday about Vandenhoek's start, mm-hmm. and he said, you know, the guy was just dynamite. I said, you know, you got a good swing on that. Well, I also kidded him. I said, look, you shouldn't have been swinging at the double that started the Bay Stars 2-run rally that got him back into game 5. And I said, you probably should have been swinging at that pitch. But, you know, it was a really nice swing. And he said, look, I noticed he was getting, you know, he was throwing harder than he normally throws. And he was just throwing fastball, fastball. And the Bay Stars were just, they were going like, man, this guy's killing us. And until Lopez doubled and Tsutsugo took him deep, and then he became normal. And he Lopez said he was throwing harder than normal, and he got burned. He burned himself out. Because Vandenhoek is normally he throws, and I can't criticize him for anything, but I'm saying it's a normal pattern that he throws his changeup a lot more. He throws his secondary pitches a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just throwing fastballs that they couldn't touch. Yeah. And that wasn't typically what we've seen, but it was more dominant than we've seen him in a long time. And so there were some oddities about that. And Lopez said, yeah, we didn't expect to see that many fastballs, and it looked like he had burned himself out. So, and that he was slow. He lost his velocity as the game went on. And obviously this is what happens. And your comment is, you know, it's the same comment I made about the Climax series, that Alex Ramirez at that time seemed to be the only manager who knew he was managing in the postseason.
Right.
And because everybody else was playing it exactly the way they did during the season. This is our pattern. You know, this is the guy, and
this
we're gonna keep
we
the
do.
Starter in until the sixth inning. If we're down 3-0, no problem. But some of the players were not playing in that mode where you could do that. You know, they were going all out from the start, and you couldn't keep them in for five innings. But it wasn't, you know, they weren't pitching according to the manager's plan. They were pitching according, they knew they were in the postseason, or they were putting pressure on themselves or whatever. And I heard a number of other pitchers comment about postseason pitch counts mm-hmm. in the majors. And I believe it was John Smoltz talking on TBS, and he was saying that, you know, I'd throw 100, you know, 10 pitches in 8 innings in the season, and that was a good workload. But I felt after, you know, 4 innings, if I had thrown 4 innings and 75 pitches in the playoffs, I was just as exhausted because of
the
intensity.
I do remember hearing that. Yeah, yeah.
And I thought about that a lot. And I thought, you know, that's true. And I think I didn't say that's true, but I've said that's very likely to be true for a lot of players. So, you know, it's something that people have to be aware of, is that the intensity will take it out of you. And so you do have to manage a little differently. I mean, it almost demands that you manage a little differently.
Right.
And Alex was the first to push that button, and Kudo took him really it really took him to game six to sort of step back and realize that.
Yeah, and one more note about game five before we move to game six was that the closer for the Bay Stars, Yasuaki Yamasaki, did load the bases in the ninth inning, and I was thinking, man, you know, if he gives up a hit here or something weird happens, you know, the lost ball in the lights, or the player who picks up the ground ball but and takes his time a little bit too much and throws it into the seats or something, and something weird happens, they're going to lose this game. The season's over.
Mm.
And, of course, you know, the last hit I think Yamasaki gave up was an infield hit. And
yep.
It just dawned on me at that point. But, you know, I've been down on him since the All-Star break, and he has lifted his level a little bit, and he was pitching fine in the postseason. He has looked great. So we get to game six last night, and you know, the managers are now, I think it was until the sixth inning that I actually tweeted it out, but I said, now it's finally looking like Kudo is in a postseason situation, because now he's, you know, he hasn't been doing much. He's just been sitting there in the dugout laughing, hacking it up, yucking it up with the players, making some moves here and there, but he's just been sitting back and watching. And the one thing I want to say about this game is you really have to love, I saw some comments on Twitter, but I really have to love Seiichi Uchikawa. Here's a guy who played a long time with the Bay Stars, did the same kind of things with them, but really wasn't in a position to win. Then he goes to a winning team, and he struggles with injuries this season a lot. You know, he has an MVP, Pacific PL MVP award. He struggles this year with some injury situations, but he comes into the playoffs in the second round of the playoffs and hits four home runs or home runs in four consecutive games. And then last night, he hits a huge home run to get him even off of Yamasaki in the ninth inning. And, you know, obviously he couldn't be the MVP, although he did hit fairly well, I think, in this series. He hit over 300, but, you know, not the big sexy hits that the media people, the media types here like. So you just got to love a guy like that. I just, there's nothing I could, you know, I saw the comments on Twitter, but I just really respect and like the work ethic that he puts in, and then the way he came up so huge for that team in that situation. Obviously, they can get to Game 7, and they can. It was the ninth inning. If they didn't get that run, the game would have ended, and Sarfate wouldn't have pitched so much, so he would have been available for Game 7 on, you know, a normal situation. But great situation for them. They win the game 4-3 in 11 innings on a walk-off hit by Keizo Kawashima, and I'm sure all the Yakult Swallows fans out there probably gritting, just grinding their teeth when they see guys who used to be in the system contributing somewhere else to a championship. That has to be hard to watch.
Well, I mean, he was a guy who didn't, you know, his time ran out with the Swallows basically because of Tetsuo Yamada and Shingo Kawabata. There was really no place for him to play anymore.
Right. And I'm not saying that, you know, the team got rid of him when it should
No,
have
but
been.
No, but he had more value than he looked like. I'll be honest. I didn't think he was as good. I knew he could play a little role, but you know, he'd be a useful player. But to be able to step in and be a quality player on a championship team, you know, and play 100 games a year, that surprised me.
Yeah, I didn't see that either. He gets this hit to right field in the 11th inning, and Takayuki Kajitani is the right fielder, and he has a good arm, and he makes a play to the plate, and Shuhei Fukuda is the runner, and he's a pretty fast runner, but a good throw and a good catch at the plate, and he's out, but they couldn't complete the play. We heard Ramirez talk about it. That's what happens when you have humans make mistakes. We understand that. They didn't call it an error.
But it could have been.
I think in the regular season it's ruled an error, but I think they don't want to end the Japan series that way, so they just called it a hit and an RBI. Yeah. So
they're okay ending it on an interference, but not on an error.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that was the umpires. Years. That was the umpires, not the official scorer. The official scorers were probably going, no!
Okay. Right. I thought the biggest play in this game, and again, I told you I was exchanging messages with Michael Westbay, I thought the biggest play in this game was in the eighth inning, when the Bay Stars had a chance to throw a runner out at third, and Yoshiki Tsunada, the pitcher who was brought in to face one guy, and got the out. He got a little comeback or a tapper right back to him, and he decides he can't get the pinch runner, Ryuma Kidokuro, at home, and he decides to throw to first. And actually, Kidokuro had stopped and was going to try to get into a rundown, and Tsunada chose to throw to first. And again, I messaged Michael right away. I said, it's the little things, and that's a run. You know, that's not just a runner. That's a run coming home.
Yeah.
And, sure enough, it cost him, and that's unfortunate.
Well, it was a little bit in retrospect, because I think if Tsunada has eyes in the back of his head, then he's in a position to see what we could see, which is that Kidokuro is basically playing red light, green light, and you know, when the guy's got his eyes, you can move when the guy's got his eys closed, because basically whenever Tsunada looked towards first base, Kidokuro was hustling home, and as soon as the pitcher turned around to look, he froze. You know,
I just think it was a situation he's not used to, and just a little bit of panic.
Number one, he did get the out, which was the important thing. And I don't have a lot of criticism for him there, but I think that yes, if he had watched Kito Kura sort of going like, oh, I might. Okay, I'm going. Wait. If he had been watching that whole progression, he would have known all he had to do was turn around and walk at him. And, you know, they would have ended up with a runner on second instead of first.
And I completely understand because in that situation, even if you give up the run, you've got the lead. So get the out, get the sure out, and
yep.
and move ahead. And
no, that was another, that was that,
they had another chance to add runs. So I completely understand.
I know, and however, especially
those little things.
Well, I think what happened. The other thing was, I think he was watching their offense all night, and he was thinking, "Oh, you mean if I give away another chance, it's not going to hurt us?" Because the Bay Stars offense, they just created so many opportunities to score, and some of them were, you know, sometimes you're going to hit into double plays, and sometimes things are going to happen, but it's almost like they contrived to, you know, stick knives in their own backs. You know, yeah. What other creative, you know, it's almost like there was some evil genius in the back room going, let's see, what other evil, what other maniacal ways can we, and how, what other maniacal ways can we possibly end this inning that will, you know, confound Yokohama fans, you know?
Right.
What kind of double play haven't they hit into yet?
Yet, yeah.
Okay. So in game six, they ran into a double play on a strike them out, throw them out. They hit into a double play. And
yeah, it was not...
No, and it these were not really well done. When you have Tatsuhiro Shibata batting six, I mean, this is the Bay Stars conundrum when you're playing the Hawks. I mean, you know, in several games, Alex Ramirez had Tatsuhiro Shibata batting second, and basically the only thing he can do is bunt. He's their worst regular hitter, mm-hmm. and in games when a couple of their pitchers bat, he's the worst hitter in the lineup. And his whole value on that in that batting order is to bunt when Kuwahara gets on first base and doesn't try to steal second. And, you know, so he can put down a sacrifice bunt. And you had him swinging away. You know, the only thing he can do is bunt. You had him swinging away in the fourth inning when they've got two on and one out, and he hits a pretty routine comebacker that, you know, Higashihama makes a good play on, but it's a pretty easy double play. And I'm thinking, and then, you know, of course, the clue comes when the reporters were asking Alex Ramirez about Kajitani's attempted bunt for a base hit in a similar situation. And I'm saying that's what Shibata ought to be doing, you know. Okay, let's drop a bunt and try to beat out it. And he almost did later in the game when that situation presented itself again, but that's what you do with him and not pretend he's a hitter.
Hashtag.
But I'd also say, you know, not pretend he's a useful, you know, he's a contributing player in that offense, because he only is because he's a 190 hitter and not a 100 hitter.
Right. So then the Hawks, they win this game in the 11th inning, and they beat
Edwin Escobar. He walked two batters. He walked beautifully. He had a great. He came in. He did it. Pitched a great 10th inning, and he walked Uchikawa, and then he walked Akira Nakamura on 8 pitches straight.
Yeah, those two batters.
After retiring, you know, he's the lefty, and he retires Alfredo D'Espagne, and then we walk Uchikawa and Nakamura basically to set up the game winning situation.
Right. And so yeah, they get the walk off. They celebrate like you should. You know, it's hard to tell these regular season walk off wins from the Japan Series and World Series walk off.
I can tell them. Anyway. I can tell them because less confetti.
Oh, it's the confetti. It's the paper. Okay, I got you.
Okay. Yep.
So the Hawks.
There you go. Just a little clue those for those people watching at home.
Thank you for that. But here's the thing: is I noticed throughout the series is you've got a less talented team against a highly talented team, and a lot of times it's just you have an elite group. They still have to put out the effort.
Sure.
And what I saw here was good preparation, great effort, great strategy by the underdog team to make it a really entertaining series.
Mm.
And like I said, I really expect next year, I expect, first of all, Alex, to get out there and get a little bit more talent somehow. I did tweet this during the game last night, but I expected to see that Shota Imanaga a lot more often during the regular season this year. We didn't see him, but maybe next year. It was his second year, so maybe we'll see more of him, that type of pitcher next year. But it was a great series. It was a great way to end the season. And the Hawks, again, their second, their first title in 2 years, eighth time winning the Japan Series, and congratulations to them. And I always ask you this every year, I did send you a note and let you know that I was going to ask you again. So your favorite moment of the season, now that everything is all done.
Okay, besides from the confetti telling us that the season's over. My favorite moment of the 2017 season came on June 26 in Sendai on a Monday night, a Monday day game. A Monday night game. And it was a Monday night game in almost a full house in Sendai to watch the Eagles play the Buffaloes. And here's the Eagles. They're struggling to stay, you know, they're sliding without Igor Umogi in the lineup. And they're in a close game, and they're trailing by two runs and in the ninth inning. And Yoshihisa Hirano, soon to be the former closer of the Oryx Buffaloes, is
soon to be the former closer.
Because he wants to go to the majors as a free agent, and he twice gets the Eagles down to their last strike, but he bounces a fork ball that Kazuya Fujita swings and misses at, that would have been the third out, and reaches base, and Zealous Wheeler scores, and now it's a one run game. And suddenly, the Eagles, who look pretty much dead, they send Kazuo Matsui up to the plate. And Matsui falls behind Hirano, but he gets a fat pitch. He lines it into left field to tie the game on a really close play at the plate. And then in the top of the 10th, Matsui goes out to play shortstop. And it's the first time he's played shortstop in a little more than 2 years. And this is a guy who played that was his 1,530th game at short in NPB, and he also played 113 games at short in the majors. And in the 11th, he started an inning-ending double play, and when he returned to the Eagles dugout, he got a standing ovation. The Eagles were out there to congratulate him, like he hit a sayonara home run, and that was my favorite moment. The game ended up in a tie, but that was my favorite moment of the season.
Wow, yeah, I remember that. I remember you tweeting about that. Didn't you even write a story about that?
I did. I wrote a fairly long story about that, yeah.
Yeah, so I saw that. See, good memory. I remember way back in June. My favorite moment is also from June, and while it's not such a touching story like that, it is something I think a lot of people remember. Takahiro Norimoto, the ace of the Eagles, went on the strikeout binge.
Right.
And on June 8th, he was facing the Yokohama Bay Stars. And he came away with an 8-2 victory. But the most important thing was he struck out double digits for the eighth consecutive game. And that wasn't he had already broken Hideo Nomo's record, NPB record. But he turned into must-see baseball for much of the country. I think it was a pretty amazing achievement that he was able to do it over eight games. He did not get to nine, but that stretch that he went through that ended with that game on June 8th was the only thing I could come up with in terms of something that really, really stayed with me. Now, there were a lot of plays. There were a lot of questionable home runs, a lot of plays at the plate that we reviewed, some runs overturned or some decisions overturned that cost teams runs, and a lot of memorable things. But I think for me, this is the moment that stuck with me. There were a lot of tears shed this past season. I think.
Well, yeah, that's gonna happen.
But that streak for me is the thing that stands out the most. So now, obviously, we talked about the draft in the show that was not recorded, and I know you always have opinions about the draft. There was one thing that you talked to me about, or that you said on that show that was lost forever, about the.
Are you trying to unlose it now? You found it.
Trying to bring it. Oh no, it's gone. It's gone.
Oh okay.
That there were a lot of position players drafted. Normally, that the draft sees a lot of pitchers.
Yep.
But there were a lot of position players drafted in the
top
10.
Typically, typically the first two rounds is usually about 20 to 21 pitchers out of 24 draft choices. This year, I think we had four position players in both of the first two rounds. So right. Very rare.
Very rare. So very rare. All right. And a couple other notes before we go. Ichiro Suzuki, who has stated that he wants to play professionally until he is 50.
All right.
Has parted ways with the Miami Marlins. I'm assuming the rumors will start there as well. We got a lot of. This is going to be a really interesting offseason with Shohei Ohtani and guys like Ichiro and big stars who are going to change teams here. But I would assume he's not going to come back to play in NPB.
I would assume.
But I'm not going to count it out. If he wants to play until he's 50, I think I said it before that the most likely scenario is that he comes back to play in NPB, where he can be one of those pinch hit guys who, you know, hits until he dies, basically.
Mm. Well, we'll see. That'll be interesting to see whether he want when if he what he said if what he said was I want to play until I'm 50, like I'm Julio Franco wanting to play until I'm 50, or it's I want to play till I'm 50 if it's in the majors. Japan. No, that's you didn't understand quite what I said when I said I've been wanted to play till 50.
Right.
Exactly.
You misunderstood it. Yeah.
That's right. You misinterpreted that. I'm not 100% certain, but I'm leaning more towards the no, it's in the majors where I want to play till I'm 50.
Right. And then the New York Mets released Norichika Aoki, and I'm sure the rumors started immediately that he would be returning to play in Japan. He just has not been able to. I mean, he's been a useful hitter, but he hasn't been able to stick with major league teams in terms of being a regular out there every day.
Yeah, everybody wants that. You know, and the funny thing is, the one thing everybody I think the one thing everybody wants from him, first of all, his defense is his arm is going. And his defense, you know, because of his speed, his defense used to be a plus, and it's not really a plus now. So, and he's always been, to some degree, Ichiro light. He's not quite as good as an outfielder, and he's not quite as good as a hitter, but he's, you know, he hit a bunch of home runs in his first year when, you know, he ran onto balls people shouldn't have been throwing him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people want to see from him. You know, if you have a guy who gets on, you know, who's got a 350 on base percentage, which is about what Aoki does, and, you know, and he hits 12 home runs a year and he plays decent defense, that's a guy who'll win you a pennant. But if you're a 350 on base percentage guy with all singles and you don't really have the arm to play right field anymore, and you become famous for taking weird routes, then people are thinking, you know, get that guy Google Maps or something because for him, he thinks the shortest distance between, you know, Chicago and Detroit is via Mexico City. So, so you know, all those things are sort of conspiring to ruin him. But obviously, he had that nice little sort of spring training with the Mets where he was the only one on the team who was playing to try to prove he belonged, and he looked good. But if you look at Aoki's career, basically he hit almost every year he does exactly the same thing. He'll hit he'll hit 286 with a 350 on base percentage, and he'll slug about 350. He'll slug about 350.
Maybe, yeah, in the big.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting. I really like to see him come back, and obviously the Swallows are would be on that map, but I don't know if he would go back to the Swallows, and it would be interesting to see where he went. And
I think I wouldn't be surprised. Well, he's not a huge icon in Japan. If he was a huge icon, the first team that would raise their hands would be the SoftBank Hawks, because Masayuki Son requires the team to make a big play towards every big-name player coming back, whether the Hawks could conceivably use them or not. And
we'll get to that in a second, yeah.
And he's a native of Kyushu, so that would seem to be a good fit. But they don't need a guy like him competing for playing time with guys who need playing time. So I don't see that. But I see a couple of teams. I'm sure Oryx would be interested in him, and Lotte would probably be interested in him.
All right, so now, speaking of the Hawks and the owner, Son, Daisuke Matsuzaka is parting ways with SoftBank, since he really hasn't been on the field since he signed with them.
Yeah, he played in one game to see if he would be useful in the postseason, and he wasn't. He's pitched.
Not at all.
He's got a little switch, you know, that says I'm going to look good in enough spring training game, you know, preseason games to make everybody think I can play, and then I'm going to get hurt. So that's unfortunately been where it is. I think he's given a really good effort, but he's just got a laundry list of issues to deal with and clear every year. That by the time he's clear them all, the season's over.
Yeah, and before we started taping, you said something about him probably taking over Kazumi Saito's job.
Yeah, which is the pitcher who is trying to rebuild his career while dispensing his expertise on how to come back from injury to his teammates.
Nice. All right, and one more piece of news. Sho Nakata has decided to not to file for free agency and remain with the Fighters, so no surprise there.
Well, that actually is a surprise.
You think so?
Yeah. I expected him to go, but I think what happened, as soon as the Hanshin Tigers said they weren't interested, his interest in becoming a free agent disappeared.
I see. Yeah, well... I think if they would have said they were interested and then they actually talked to him, that their interest level would have dropped. So,
wow.
Hashtag high heat.
I don't know, man. But anyway, I would say, you know, you got a good thing up there. Don't blow it.
Don't blow it. You know, rebuild it rather than throw it away, because he's been blowing it for the last couple of years.
You're telling me. All right, so we actually, we're going to call it a wrap here, but we've got a question that we'll address next week, and we will be recording a show next week, and then we'll figure out our off-season program and programming schedule, so we will let you know. Thanks a lot for listening, and we apologize for last week and the no-show, so to speak, and then the solo show that came later, but sometimes technical difficulties happen, so we do apologize.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your off-season. Thank you.